email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5, 5 on ray@rte.ie. Last Thursday I went to see Poor in the Gay Theatre. You probably know by now, it's the stage adaptation of Catriona O'Sullivan's 2023 powerful memoir of the same name, Poor. It opened up conversations about class, inequality, education and childhood trauma. And Catriona joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Catriona, and congratulations.
Thank you so
on the
much.
Adaptation. I was there. You were sitting in front of me with your husband, David, and your son, John. And although my eyes were on the stage, every so often my mind drifted to you and how it was for you and how it was for David and how it was for John.
Yes.
What was the experience for you watching it?
So that was the fifth time I've watched it live. Yes, so yeah. I've watched all the previews. It was the hardest, to be honest, because John was there. Dave's watched it twice already. But because John was there, I'm just his mam. So, and he loves my parents and hadn't read half the book, so hadn't seen it. So I was really conscious of him. So I was watching it through his eyes as well as my own, which was kind of very emotional. But also, I kind of watch it from a distance as well, Ray. So like I have like a kind of meta view of it because I'm so conscious of, like I've been involved all the way. The casting, the words are mine. A lot of them are mine directly from the book. So I'm conscious that the actors are doing their job. So I'm watching for the things that I know maybe that have been challenging. There's a part of me that's watching it from a distance. But then, you know, watching my parents die on stage. I'm not spoiling it here. Like they die. That's hard. That's really hard.
And John, like you say, hasn't read the book in its totality. And his birth is dramatised on the stage. His grandparents smoking heroin is dramatised on the stage.
Yes.
And he was seeing that for the first time.
Yeah.
So what was the chat like afterwards?
It was tense. So I could, like his partner, he's been with since he's 16. They've been together, you know, a long time. I could see her putting her hand on his knee because John's not a crier, you know. He feels his feelings, so I could see him crying at the end. And so it was kind of tense. And I was like, "Are you okay? Are we okay?" This morning, I was like, "Are we okay?" Because, you know, I don't want to hurt him, but also, I want to help people, Ray. And I do think my story, my story is very unique in a way because I'm one of the few people who actually has had the privilege of escaping that life. And so I feel as if in some way I have a responsibility to use that to help people, but I don't want to hurt my family as well. And so it was lovely, actually. We went to the bar and he was so hugged and loved and it was fine then. It was absolutely fine. But during, there was obviously tense moments.
Because I suppose, and I was wondering, why would you do this?
Yes.
And did you ask yourself the same question?
Lots of times.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why. I think, honestly, I've always been a storyteller since I was a kid. My nickname as a child, not in a loving way, was Mouth. So because I was always outward and always wanting to say what was going on because it was really terrifying and I felt like nobody was noticing. So I've always wanted to be heard. But that's not a reason to tell a story. And I would definitely say to people who've had trauma not to write a memoir if they haven't had a time to process it. Like one of the reasons why I chose to tell my story in such a graphic way is because when I went to Trinity and I got my PhD and I really got educated, I realised, Ray, that a lot of people get access to education and they get access to great jobs and great experiences and they take all that privilege and they do nothing with it. Yeah. Like they keep it for their kids, they send them to the institute, they get them into Trinity and they just keep reproducing this privilege. And I really didn't want to be that person. Like Ireland saved me. Like the policies of the 90s and the early 2000s actually allowed me escape my destiny. And I didn't want to be one of them people who had all this privilege and didn't do something with it. And it is a gift to be able to be honest about my story. And like, it is funny because people like yourself will go, how is she doing this? But I'm okay. You know, yeah. Ray, like I'm really healed and I have a lot of love in my life and I have a lot of security in my being. So like while it's difficult for you to see that or other people, I'm actually really good. I feel really proud of myself when I watch the
story. And you should be, of course.
So it's not traumatic for me to watch it. I actually am so aware of how much I've been through and how proud I am of myself and my family. Like last night when we were sitting in that row, there was just love all down the row because I've built this loving home, because I was gifted education, I was gifted therapy, I was gifted childcare, I was gifted secure housing. And so I actually don't find it that difficult.
Yeah. And you would hope that this will change the world.
Yes.
In a real way.
That's what I want to do. Like, I want to make sure that, like, there's no girl out there who walks around like I did, feeling like they failed themselves. Like, you can't leave my play or my book and not realise that childhood poverty is connected to adult failure. Like, I failed as an adult many times because I lived in poverty. And that poverty was not caused by my parents. It was caused by underserving of communities, by corralling poor people together, not giving them opportunities, not educating them. So I think you can't actually, you know, you can't leave the story without going, oh my God, these people need help. They actually need support. There's reasons why they end up that way. So,
And part of that adult failure is in parenting.
Yes.
And there is a cycle.
Yes.
That continues on and on.
And you could see
your mother came from a poor background.
Yeah.
And an abusive background.
Yeah,
was
abusive
it?
Background.
Yes.
So her mom, like, she grew up in a little prefab in Coventry. They didn't even have a house. You know, she was a widow. Her mom was a widow. Then her kids were in care. My nanny's kids were in care. Some of them were in care. Then my nanny married my granddad, who came from Ireland. There was a lot of poverty, a lot of trauma. He was an alcoholic. My mom experienced violence as a child and hunger. This poverty reproduces itself in exactly the same way that privilege does.
And were you worried then? And I know it's a thing, you know, talking about your mother, and you say it in the play as well as the book, that you found it difficult sometimes to describe your mother.
Yeah.
And without giving it that total context, you know, just reminding people, okay, this is what my life was like, and you might blame my parents, but you can't because it was their parents, and it's a system that doesn't support them properly.
Yeah, and that's really important to me. Now that's been my own journey as well. Like there's a speech in the play. It's a Shakespeare speech, and it's the Quality of Mercy from The Merchant of Venice, which I actually studied when I was a kid doing GCSEs. And like, I give myself and my mother and my father mercy, Ray. Like, no person in their right mind would choose that miserable life. There's absolutely no way that an addict would choose to be an addict, Ray. And I say that also as a hurt person who was really hurt by my mom. So it is very complex. Like, I don't sit here as her daughter and think, I forgive you and it's fine. I sit here and go, you hurt me. I deserve to be loved, but I understand why. Mm. And I don't hold that against you. And the reason I don't hold that is because I'd be holding it against me. Like, the baggage that goes with anger is something I just don't want to have in my life. So I choose forgiveness, but I don't experience that every day.
Yeah.
There's some days I wake up and I'm like, I actually can't talk about this today because I'm really angry at this woman. And I really, so I don't, on them days, I have to kind of find my way back to that position where I do feel forgiveness and I do feel the love.
So you said you were across it, which is brilliant. The writing of the book was obviously cathartic for you. Seeing it on stage, what is that like?
It's
because it's completely different, isn't it?
Yes.
Because the senses are moved. There's music and there's movement and, you know, there's obviously acting, there's tears. And actually, the moment I cried, you said to me before, you said, you're going to cry. And I thought it would have been the obvious ones, you know, where you were abused as a 7 or 8 year old child or things like that. But it was actually the day the school teacher, Miss Arkinson, was so caring that she gave you a towel and some clean underwear because you'd been called smelly at school.
Yeah.
And that's compassion. Yes. That's what moved me to tears.
Well, so I think, Ray, my story is a call for kindness. Like, Miss Arkinson, change my life. Like, we all have the power to do that. Like, that woman, she placed a light in my chest when it was completely dark, and she didn't shame me, and she gave me the strength, I think, to continue on. Like, I always tell this story when I do public speaking, but I always tell this story before I met Miss Arkinson. I used to lie in bed in my house, which was pretty crazy, and the darkest feeling I had and thought was, nobody's ever going to come for you. No one loves you. And after about a year of being with Miss Arkinson and that wonderful care, I'd have that thought, no one's going to come for you. And then I'd have this other really, really small thought. I'd go, Miss Arkinson thinks you're somebody. Hmm. We all need someone to think we're somebody. And it shouldn't be dependent on the way we act. Like, I was a bold kid. Hmm. I would tell you to off. I'm not going to swear on the radio. As quick as anything, Ray, because yeah. I was traumatised and I was reactive, as hurt kids are. But Miss Arkinson didn't care. Like, she didn't expect me to behave myself. She still cared and loved me, even without that. And that gave me this bright feeling in my chest. And my story is that. It's a pocket, the pockets of sunshine, the people, the stepping stones that allowed me to continue and find my way in the darkness. And so my inner monologue is, and it's still there. Like, there's still the dark feelings. Am I lovable? Like, did I do something? But then there's this other, Miss Arkinson thought you were amazing. Yeah. Mr. Pickering told you were brilliant at English. Irina, remember Irina? She always told you could do it.
Irina was Access in Trinity.
Yes, in Trinity. Course. And like, I still have that now, right? Yeah. In my career in Maynooth University, like, I have a couple of mentors. I put Mac McLaughlin, Gemma Irvine, they're in leadership positions. They come to me and they say, you should do this. This is your brilliance. You should do this. Because I don't know what I'm doing still. Like, I'm still sometimes that lost girl. And I think poor is a call to people who can help. They should. I'm the consequence of people just giving that extra bit of love.
And I watched your UN speech, which is very moving. And you cited the conditions in Ireland, which were perfect to you, for you during the Celtic Tiger. So you got a lot of free services locally.
Yes.
And without those, you would be maybe still cleaning toilets, and that's, somebody has to clean toilets, and that's admirable. But
yeah.
You got access to education, which led you to Trinity College, which led you to where you are.
Yes.
Do those services still exist?
No. And that's the point of poor. That's why I told the story.
Yeah.
Because if that girl, I met a girl on O'Connell Bridge, my friend Karen, who I'd known for a couple of years. She was a lone parent, gritty, resilient young woman. And she stood there and went, I'm in Trinity College, with her townie accent. And I went, no way. And she said, yes, I am. And I was like, I marched over to Trinity. She told me where I was, marched over and knocked the door. If it was today and I met her today, I couldn't have done that. First of all, you can't march over. There's no door to knock. You have to fill in the form online. You don't get to meet a person. Like, you have to meet people, Ray.
Yes.
They have to be able to meet you and say, oh, she's good. She has a light in her. She's willing. But the other thing was, like, it was the community worker, Joe, who actually referred me to counselling. Like, when you're really poor, you're not going to go to, like, the social welfare and ask for help. Like, them people seem so far. But, like, community workers, youth workers, they are the people that people like me trust, because they're a bit like us. They're a bit sound. They smoke. They might drink tea. But they understand all of the complexities. So Joe was, like, this starting point in my community. That's all been cut. Youth work, community services, community workers, cut. And they've never been, that's never been reinstated.
We're still a rich country.
We're so rich. We're back where we were then.
Yes.
We're actually better now. The other thing is the therapy. So I got free therapy. I asked for help on a Monday and I was in therapy the Monday after. Like, 1 week I asked for help. Ray, if you ask for help today, you're on a waiting list for 6 months, if that, to get an assessment. So, like, these bits and pieces that got me to that place. And then there was the childcare, and then there was the funding. So, say, for example, now, if you're in a low... So, I was working as a cleaner. There's nothing wrong with cleaning, Ray. But if that's your only choice, there's something wrong with that. So, like, I never knew I could be anything else. And that's my point about cleaning or serving in shops or coffee shops. It's not that there's anything wrong with them jobs, but I should be told that I could be a lawyer or a solicitor or a psychologist, exactly the same as every other rich kid who doesn't clean the toilets. And so when I wanted to leave a cleaning job and go to Trinity College through the Access Programme, you're not allowed to do that, because you can't get back to education allowance if you leave a job. So you're actually stuck in a cycle of poverty,
so
a low income.
We've regressed as a country.
We've regressed. What we did was we closed when we're in crisis, we cut services. We bring so we're in crisis. We had the terrible times, the bank debt, whatever, and we cut all the good services. And then we came back and we're back up and we're not reinstating them. Like, and then there's childcare. So John was seven. I went to Trinity. John was seven. He was able to be picked up from school and go to the school on the stints after school. It was paid for and it was supported. So all of these things, I got my rent allowance. I kept my benefits. People might judge me for that. But when you grow up on the street, dependent your whole life on benefits, that's so hard to let go of because you're like, if I haven't got that, what else have I got? And so there's a lot of services that have gone that have not been reinstated. And that's what Paul is calling for, because we're not charity, Ray. Like, I'm amazing. Like, I'm an amazing advocate and I'm an amazing academic.
Yeah.
I published in Nature. Like, I'm brilliant. It's not like I'm a poor, broken person, like, going, please, sir, can I have some more? Like,
you say there's excellence everywhere, but not opportunity.
Yes. Like, and I'm not the best kid from my community. Ray, there was girls that were better than me and they're in prison. They're dead. They're not doing what I'm doing. Like, I was really lucky that there was a few people that kept me going along the way. And then I was in Ireland at a time that it was actually possible for us to try things and do really well.
You're going to stay with us. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And Katrina will be with us when we come back.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're speaking to Katrina O'Sullivan, and Poor, the adaptation of her book Poor, is now running in the Gay Theatre until the beginning of November. Is it sold out?
It's sold out.
All right. Right.
But watch this space. Watch this space. You never know. We might try and extend it. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of call for it. So
listening to you before the break, I couldn't help but think of you in the role of, what am I going to say? President of Ireland.
That was, Ray, I really did consider going for it. So when my book came out originally, Anya Kerr got in touch with me and she was like, you should run for presidency. And I was like laughing. I did a show for her and I was laughing. She's like, honestly, I mean it. So anyway, that was a little seed planted. And then when Conor McGregor said he was going to run, I was like, if he runs, I have to run, because that cannot be the only person. And then that was a kind of joke. And then actually about 6 months ago, I really did consider it. And I had a chat with a couple of parties and had a little bit of a review in terms of like media. But the truth is, the reason I chose not to is not because I think I'd be a great example as a president. Like, I was 15, Ray, and my aspirations in life were to get a flat, to meet a guy, and if I could get a secure social welfare payment, that was my aspirations. And because of Ireland, I'm now a professor of psychology. Like, what an emblem that would be, and what a great example of a president. However, I still have vulnerabilities, you know, like I've been through a lot, and I don't think I could do with the media scrutiny.
When you said you did a media review, what do you mean?
I paid someone to say, how would you criticise me? Like, what were the things that you would do? Because someone had advised me to do that. Someone who worked in Trinity said to me, here's this guy's number, get him to do a review, like, go hard on you. So he actually, like, went off and did a little digging deep. And he said, these are the questions that
I
think.
So you sat in front of him.
Yeah.
As he said to you, these are the things that others will say to you.
Yeah, that potentially would come up.
Can you share any of that with us?
Well, the thing that put me off was my family. So my sister and my brother and siblings, like, my book, I don't name them.
No.
Their names have changed. And I couldn't imagine hurting them any more than they've ever been hurt already. And already telling my story has hurt them, Ray, because it's in the media and it hurts them because it reminds them.
And did you not get their permission beforehand?
I did in some cases, but some cases I couldn't because they're not well, or there's prison. And I just, that made me really scared, the idea of, like, it infringing on their life. But also then, just like, honestly, I don't want to be taught. If I'm a politician or involved in public service, I want you to talk about my policies. I want people talking about what I look like. Like, I look at politicians, women politicians' posts, and like, if you go through the comments, it's like the state of her hair, the size of her ass. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not here for that. I've had enough abuse in my life and I don't want to open myself up to more abuse. So I kind of made the decision that now's not the time. I'm not saying it'll never happen. I'll give it 7 years, who knows? We'll see how we get on. But right now, I don't think it's for me.
Yeah. We've had 35 good years.
Yes.
Of presidencies.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
I need to brush up on my Irish as well, obviously.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that'll be important. So I was talking to people at the first night on Thursday night. Some people had read the book and some people hadn't. And I found these were just short conversations. I found that the people who hadn't read the book were most impacted by the play.
Wow.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that's interesting to me because, like, through the previews and the opening night, it's really funny to see the different responses. Because people who have read the book genuinely love the book and they are so, like, really, I'm so connected to them.
Yes.
Like, they love me.
They love you.
They
yeah,
love
they,
me.
They
and
do
I love them.
Yeah, no,
but it's a wonderful community of people. Yes. Like, it's actually shown me that there's so, I'm going to cry saying that, but there's so much hope.
And love. Yeah.
And, like, I thought there was no love in the world, Ray. And, like, so this experience and, like, social media and sharing my story has been so empowering and so loving. So them people, when they come, they're just like, give me a hug. Oh my God, I love your story. And that's beautiful. And then there's the ones that have never seen it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I met a few myself this last week or so. They're like, I don't know. They don't know what to do with this. They don't know what to do with it. And the messages afterwards, like one person particularly sent me a message that I haven't stopped thinking about you all day. What can I do? Mm. What can I do? And that's the reason that I've told my story, because I'm trying to encourage people to do more, to help, to use whatever privilege they have.
And the previews, you sent out 600 free tickets to community activists and organisations in the inner city.
In the inner city. So I was there the first of that. So, yeah, it's called Gateways, the Gateways Project. And usually they give 200 tickets for Gateways. But this time for Poor, I was like, let's try fill the whole theatre with people like me.
Right.
You know, I've been through Solskjaer and Sale, the women's programmes, you know, the Star Project in Ballyfermot. So this week there was 200 of them in, and oh God, it was so powerful. Like, loads of them have never, there was, you know, homeless fellas there from the Salvation Army, people on heroin, methadone, you know, criminality in their history. It was beautiful. It was vibrant. They were so respectful of the story, of the space, but it was absolutely gorgeous to actually see the space. Mm. Like, the gate, come on.
Yeah,
It's so historic.
Yes,
and
yes.
So posh and privileged. Like, my granny used to go there. She used to wear a stole, you know.
Was your granny posh?
Oh, yeah, the Clontarf the granny. Yeah, they were very posh. You know, they were lovely.
Because your dad was a big reader.
Oh, my dad was a big reader, yeah. Big reader.
And he got offered Trinity.
Yes. He did.
So what happened?
He was in Ireland. He was adopted when he was age 5, Ray. And when I wrote Poor, we had the story from my dad that he was in Golden Bridge and he was in a fire, which turned out all to be a lie. So I actually got his papers from Tuzla. And my dad was actually passed between 5 houses between the ages of 0 and 5. He was going to be adopted. Like, so he was in a home for the first year. And they said they wanted to adopt him. It was a beautiful story. And then on the Friday before the adoption, they sent a letter to Tuzla, or whatever it was called at the time, and said, actually, we've changed our mind. Can you come and take him back next week? So my dad, he just had no stable grounds. And so even though he was adopted into a wonderful home with two...
The damage was done.
It was done.
Yes.
And they were very stoic people. They weren't loving people, but they loved and they were strong and stable and they were wonderful Christians, you know, Catholic people. But it was too late, I think. The first 5 years is so important in a child's life. And my dad just was like, he just left. There was a lot of drugs in Clontarf, actually, when my dad was... My dad was born in 1953, and when he turned 18, he'd already tried heroin in Dublin, in Clontarf. So it's quite... there's a story there. But he legged it to England and pursued this life of absolute crime and drug taking, but he was a clever addict. So Ray, like, my dad would know the history of Russia. Yeah. So he'd be stoned out of his head and be talking about Gorbachev and all the history of Russia and Stalin, and you'd be like, the confusion of that.
Yes.
Because you've got this really clever guy who was trying to educate me, but also he was stoned out of his head and he was robbing people.
I suppose nobody's immune to addiction.
No, not at all. Yeah. And I think trauma is a really important thing to recognise. And we have a lot of trauma in Ireland, and that's why we have a lot of alcoholism. And we don't talk a lot about the connection between trauma and addiction and how it is a predisposition when people have been hurt as kids, in whatever way that is.
And do you feel the word trauma has been overused?
Well,
it's been bandied about.
I think people misuse it.
Yes. Okay.
So, like, trauma is an event that happens that you cannot integrate into your existing psychological system, Ray. So, like, breaking up with somebody and that hurting you and then it getting okay again, that's not trauma. That's just a really painful situation. I'm sorry for that. But trauma is when you experience something that you cannot integrate into your cognitive system. So what it does is it swims around in your brain and it actually changes your brain. So there's one trauma and then there's consistent trauma and then there's who commits the trauma. The biggest predictor of what how you respond to trauma is what happens afterwards. So you can experience abuse as a child, like I did. And if you are supported, you're in a loving family, you get therapy, the consequence of that trauma is minimised massively. It's not that it doesn't affect you, but it's actually minimal. But it's what happens afterwards. And we need to... So, yeah, I think it's misused. And that really annoys me. As someone who's had trauma, I'm like, lads, it's you don't just breathe and go sea swimming and then it's over. Like, that just diminishes how...
You're undermining your real trauma.
It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. But, like, trauma has different layers and it can be... consistent trauma, it can be one experience, and all of them things will impact on what the effect will be.
So just for people, it sold out and I was curious as to how you were going to stage this, but it staged brilliantly.
Yeah.
The other thing that your dad gifted you was a love of music.
Yes.
And a particular album, Fleetwood Mac's Rumours, features heavily in the production. Mm. And lovely, euphoric nearly breaks in the grimness of it all. I think you refer to it as little spots of sunshine.
Yeah, pockets of sunshine.
Pockets of sunshine.
Pockets of sunshine.
Well, listen, congratulations again. And when you do Hunger, we might talk about it at some stage. That's the next memoir.
The next book, yeah. Next book. Hunger. Yeah, the biography
Hungry,
of my body.
And it's written already.
It's written already. It's ready to go. It's out in April.
Right.
And I'll be talking about that again very soon.
Yes, okay.
Let's get poor. Poor is never ending, though.
No, and it's unlikely to go away anytime soon.
Yes.
Yeah. Katrina, thanks so much. Thanks,
Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. KLM Royal Dutch Airlines connects unmissable European destinations from Dublin or Cork Airport. Explore Amsterdam or fly onwards to Barcelona, Florence, Geneva, Helsinki, Prague, and much more. Embrace the world on your next unforgettable journey with KLM Royal Dutch Airlines. Book now at klm.ie. Sometimes getting older is a good thing. Take a fine cheese. With steady planning, careful preparation, and trusted guidance, at every stage of the process, it matures. At Standard Life, we believe in a similar approach when planning for retirement. Because when you do, things get better with age. Search Retirement Hub or talk to your financial advisor today. Standard Life International DAC is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Three ancient Greek myths, two new Irish plays, one epic experience at the Abbey Theatre. The Boy, a two-play theatrical event, is now on Ireland's national stage. Playwright Marina Carr and director Katrina McLaughlin reunite with an electrifying take on a family saga for the ages. The Boy is at the Abbey Theatre until November 1st. Tickets from €15, funded by the Arts Council.
RTE. Supporting the arts.
Ag tacu leis na halianna.
It's almost 4 o'clock on RTE Radio 1 with the new Dublin Airport app. Travel smarter with live flight updates and extra discounts at the duty free. Download the app today.
Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a lot of reaction to Katrina O'Sullivan. Shane says, I know Katrina, have done for many years. I'm in total awe and respect for her. She's a true inspiration, says Shane and Talla. Katrina, you're a legend. Any hope that your play Poor will come to Cork, asks Marion in Cove. And what a remarkable woman, a shining light for anyone who has ever been in the place she has come from. Having been a foster carer, I've seen what neglect and abuse can do to a child's soul. And it's the hardest thing to convince a child how worthy they are. Katrina is amazing. Katrina spoke about her teacher and their kindness. There are so many kind people who work in care and foster care and enrich children's lives, is that person. And Dr. Katrina, it's Professor Katrina. Dr. Katrina is indeed magnificent, amazing, wondrous, brilliant. There aren't enough words. She floors me every time I hear her, says Teresa. And Katrina Sullivan, such an amazing woman, bought her book and can't wait to read it. She's a brave soul who went through such horrible things but came through it. Like the shining star that she is, she's an inspiration to those in sad situations who see no light at the end of the tunnel. She should be applauded for that, says Orla. And that lady you have on, Katrina, is absolutely brilliant. I saw her play last week. Brilliant. Wish her well. I love that woman. So positive and empowering. I heard her speak in the convention centre and she was a powerhouse of encouragement and achievement who just lit up that huge space, is Geraldine. And in floods of tears, chopping the spuds, listen to Katrina. What a woman. What can we do to help? Well, I suppose Katrina's gone now. We'd better ask her that question than me. But definitely we need to be more understanding and more tolerant of people that we encounter who have been through trauma. And according to some statistics, 70% of people who experience addiction in life have suffered trauma. My friend who is a teacher told me to read Poor. I listened to the audiobook, one of the best books I've ever heard. The story about the kind teacher will stick with me forever. This play should be toured nationwide, says Jennifer. And Liz says, listening to Katrina, she's really admirable. I read her book and it was hard reading. Very sad what a child can go through. Well done to her for her resilience and bravery, says Liz. And we were delighted to have awarded Katrina Sullivan the Nollaig na Mban Award here in Ballybock in North Strand. She richly deserved every bit of success. Well done, Katrina. And as we said, Fleetwood Mac features in the play, and there is a scene where the actor who plays Katrina professes her love for her parents through song. And this is the song that she uses, Songbird. So we played a bit of this to bring us up to note.